Welcome to the brand new Moral Heritage Podcast. In this episode, a few words of welcome and the Trump new peace deal. Peace and prosperity. Is it really a vision for peace in the Middle East? Okay, so here we go with the first ever Moral Heritage Podcast. I'm Rabbi Yaakov Menken. I'm the managing director of an organization called Coalition for Jewish Values. We support traditional Jewish values in public policy. This podcast, however, is my own opinion, so don't blame the organization if I say something you don't agree with, because you know what they say, two Jews, three opinions. So I'm just me. And I'm doing this in monologue format, and I just think that calling it moral heritage, which kind of sends a message about how there's a set of moral values that the founding fathers believed in, and that's what we're supposed to be talking about here, is a little bit better than merely Menken's monologues. But that's really what it's going to be until or unless we have a guest host, which I have somebody in mind to come in and host occasionally, and we'll see how that works out. But I've been prevailed upon by a number of people to start doing this, to podcast some monologues about, especially about how Jewish ethical values relate to things that we're talking about in public policy. And so that's where this comes from. I'm perfectly good at talking to myself in the car, talking to myself wandering around the house. So the question is how I do sitting in front of a microphone like this. We're going to see how this goes. I hope you enjoy it. That's all I can say. So let's get going. I want to spend the time this week talking about the new peace plan coming out of the Trump administration, Peace and Prosperity, a new vision for peace in the Middle East between Israel and the Palestinians. And this is something on which Coalition for Jewish Values has not issued a statement, because CJV issues a statement on matters where we feel the Torah mandates a particular position. And something like a peace plan involves a negotiation and proposing an idea that obviously takes into account contrary positions. So even if we believe that the Torah definitely necessitated a particular view, obviously this vision would have to be somewhere outside of it. With all of that said, however, it's not as if we don't have thoughts about it. And so on the webpage, I'm going to provide you links to two different articles by senior rabbinic fellows of the CJV, my colleagues Rabbi Stephen Przanski, Rabbi Dov Fisher. But I'd also like to talk about what the reaction has been like to this new plan. And I think the best article to look at for this is one by Jonathan Tobin at the Jewish News Syndicate called Time for the Architects of Middle East Failures to Be Quiet. Because you see, it's not just the Palestinians who are saying this is a terrible plan. It's anybody who doesn't like Trump. The idea that he could come up with a better plan than all the previous failures, that they just cannot conscience that. So Tobin refers in particular to an article you'll find on Politico called The Real Goal of Trump's Middle East Plan. It's not peace, it's power. And it's by Robert Malley and Aaron David Miller. And they point out that here comes a document. Here's a quote. The motives behind a document conceived without any Palestinian input, unveiled on the same day as an important vote in the Israeli parliament on Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu's immunity, and less than a year before Americans vote for their next president, are at once more mundane and more grandiose. You see, it's not about peace, they tell you. They insist it's not about peace. And the key point they make is, oh yeah, you see, there's no Palestinian input here. It's not a fair plan. The idea that this is somehow related to Bibi Netanyahu's parliamentary problems, they've been postponing proposing this peace plan through two Israeli elections that did not bring about a final result. I mean, that's what it means to have a democracy. And the particular structure of Israel's democracy is that the prime minister is appointed by the party that is able to form a governing coalition. Twice in a row, nobody has been able to form a governing coalition, and that's why we're going back in Israel for a third round of elections. So he's been postponing this month after month after month. And they just said, look, it's time already. And so the idea that they're doing this specifically, that, oh, they just want to help Bibi, oh, they just want to help the president's election, it's silliness. It's silly. And the ultimate silliness is his claim that it happened without Palestinian input. Look, again, the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and even Qatar, which has been a financier of Hamas and a harbor of Hamas terrorism, these folks say this plan is a good plan. So it's not as if the Arab world was not consulted. It's that the Palestinians refuse to talk to Trump. They refuse to give it a chance. That's not Trump's fault, and that's not the Israelis' fault. They, for sure, they solicited Palestinian input. The Palestinians refused to talk to them. They said, look, if there's any reason why the Trump administration will not talk to the Palestinian Authority, it's because they said, we won't talk to the Palestinian Authority until it stops providing financial rewards to the families of terrorists. Well, the Palestinian reaction to that was, oh, no, these are fundamental justice to provide these payments. Really? Fundamental justice to provide payments to the families of murderers, which, by the way, are far greater than the salaries they pay to their actual employees. So this craziness is the only reason why the Trump administration is not willing to dialogue with the Palestinian Authority. Palestinian Authority refuses to talk to the Trump administration because the Trump administration has obviously taken a much fairer look at the Middle East than an awful lot of predecessors. And of course, went ahead and did things which, you know, the left immediately predicted was going to result in disaster, like moving the embassy. Wasn't moving the embassy supposed to result in massive riots and instability and new wars? And guess what? Just the opposite. You know, it's not as if the situation is great in Israel, but it did not get an iota worse because the United States decided that it's finally time to move their embassy to the capital of Israel, the same way that the American embassy is in the capital of every other country, including countries involved in international disputes. It's just fairness. It's just being reasonable. But you see, fair and reasonable, that's not part of the Palestinian playbook. And that's part of the point that Jonathan Tobin is making in his response piece, which is called, again, Time for the Architects of Middle East Failures to Be Quiet. He makes a relatively simple point. It's not as if Miller and Malley are coming at this, you know, they're not nobodies. They definitely have experience. But what was that experience? Miller, he may today be a senior fellow at Carnegie Endowment for Peace, but he was part of the U.S. State Department from 1978 to 2003. He was there when the Oslo Accords were put into place. He was there when Arafat and Ehud Barak met at Camp David with Bill Clinton. Malley is actually one of the organizers of that particular summit. And where has that brought us? Death and destruction is where it brought us. I mean, obviously, the Oslo Accords were supposed to bring a Palestinian authority that enabled self-governance for the Palestinians and real democracy. Well, I don't know of too many real democracies where the president is in the 15th year of his four-year term, which is the case for Mahmoud Abbas. There are certainly not flourishing democracies where a terror organization takes control, throws their opponents off of rooftops, and proceeds to launch one war after another with the neighboring country. That's just not the way democracies behave. That's exactly the way the genocidal Hamas terror organization has behaved ever since taking control of Gaza. So that's the track record on which Miller and Malley are going. And Jonathan Tobin makes a great point. He says, look, these are not guys whose opinion should mean anything to you about this peace plan. The only reason the Palestinians are not talking peace with the administration is because the Palestinians refuse to stop funding terror and refuse to talk to the administration. Let's turn then to two articles from CJV Fellows. First of all, there's Rabbi Dov Fisher's article called The Deal of the Century, a Non-Starter. And he explains, for three reasons, why it should be a non-starter. First of all, it should be a non-starter for the Jews because it's talking about relinquishing land, part of the land of Israel, part of Eretz Yisrael. And not only that, that the Jewish communities can't expand outside of certain areas, at least during the period that this plan is in effect. And that's something I want to get back to later. So it just makes no sense from that perspective. From the Palestinian perspective, how can, you know, the Arab Muslims claim that Judea and Samaria is entirely theirs? And here comes a plan that is allowing Israel to annex it, the Jewish communities that are in that territory. So it's completely unacceptable to them. And finally, of course, you have the Hamas terror organization in Gaza being told that in order for it to participate in this plan, it has to demilitarize, fully recognize the legitimacy of Israel, and stop preaching death and destruction. And that's not going to happen. So he has a point that it's a non-starter. This is a plan that's quite likely to go nowhere. And that's actually part of a point that I want to get back to after. Let's first talk about Rabbi Pruzansky's article. It's called The Deal of the Century, Cautious Pessimism. Yes, he says, it's talking about Israel giving up territory that there's no reason for it to yield. There is no reason why the Palestinians are supposed to get the entirety of the West Bank for themselves. If we go back into history, let's understand that the West Bank, quote unquote, is called that only because Jordan called it the West Bank from 1948 to 1967, when they occupied it by military force and ethnically cleansed out every Jew who resided there. You see, the idea that Hebron is an Arab city, the Jews do not leave Hebron, a place like Hebron. In fact, they don't leave any of Israel voluntarily. They were ethnically cleansed out of Hebron most recently in riots in 1929 when there was a massacre of the Jews by the Arabs. Now, according to this count, you're supposed to say then that Israel is somehow the occupier? Israel is the one acting illegally? That's saying that ethnic cleansing is a good idea as long as the victims are Jews. So saying that the Palestinians should have a territory, the entire size of the West Bank, even if it's not entirely in the West Bank, is unreasonable. To say that Israel should carve up the Negev and create entirely new Arab communities linked to Gaza by tracing along the southern border with Egypt, it's not reasonable. It's not reasonable. And this whole idea, I mean, we'll have to get back to the idea of this Palestinian people who are somehow distinct from the Egyptians, the Jordanians, the Lebanese, the Syrians, etc., etc. Because all of that is just a mythological story. And this idea that the Palestinians must have territory in Israel, not territory taken from Jordan or from Egypt or from Lebanon, this is just part of a long-standing Arab goal of carving up Israel as much as possible. And for the Palestinian agenda in particular, the final agenda is to destroy Israel. So the idea that they should get these pieces of land to just kind of grow gradually into that position, it should be a complete non-starter. That's the first point that Rabbi Pruzansky makes. Number two is he says, look, if a left-wing government takes over in Israel, they're going to negotiate from a place of weakness, danger, and vulnerability, and then things are just going to get worse. So this deal only works under a right-wing government, and indeed, Netanyahu has just been indicted. And he says, okay, well, with all that said, why is this not an unmitigated disaster, like every other American or Israeli peace plan going back to the Rogers Plan of 1969. He said, here's a quote, "It is because it must be measured not against paradise, but against the status quo." See, the status quo is actually, you know, Israel built a security barrier And of course, it's called the apartheid wall by the left that would like to see Israel removed. You know, removing that barrier will return us to where we were before 2000, in the 2000s when it was built. It was built because Arabs were blowing themselves up in the middle of Israeli discotheques and pizzerias, even during the middle of a Passover Seder. They murdered literally dozens of people with suicide bombings. And those have now all come to an end because of this so-called apartheid barrier. Think about that the next time you hear it called the apartheid barrier. Think about somebody saying they want to take it down. So without removing any of the incitement to murder, because that's going and it's been going and it's continuing to go exactly as it was, with all that incitement to murder, you want to remove the protection that keeps Jewish people alive. You'd rather see thousands of them blown up every year for the crime of eating pizza. Okay. You know, you they say this and they claim not to be the intellectual descendants of Joseph Goebbels. I don't get it. I really don't. But that's the status quo. The status quo is that a lot of terrorism has been stopped, that Israel's position is actually getting much stronger. The Arab world is much more interested in doing business with Israel than it was even 5 years ago. Some of that, by the way, does have to be credited to the current administration in the United States, to Trump. But an awful lot of it is Bibi Netanyahu and the simple productivity of all the inventions, all the technological development that are coming out of Israel. So the situation is changing in a positive direction. This plan takes things into mind in a yet more positive way. It actually recognizes that Israel has historical rights to that land. It allows Israel to annex the settlements, quote unquote, which are not really settlements. They're just Israeli cities in the territory from which Jews were ethnically cleansed in and prior to 1948. So this type of positive move, and it's explicitly because the Arab armies, especially the so-called Palestinians, have been intransigent, have not negotiated, have refused to participate in any deal. The idea that it should actually cost them, that now they're getting offered an inferior deal because of their intransigence, that doesn't encourage them to be intransigent any longer. It encourages them to actually say, wait a minute, I better cut a deal now before it gets bad. Now here's where I'm going to diverge. And I'm going to say the thing about this plan, the glory of this plan, is it's not going to work. Let me say it again. The glory of this plan is that it's not going to work. The Palestinians have really dug themselves into a corner. Mahmoud Abbas will not have, having preached death, mayhem, destruction, how the Israelis are a bunch of thieves and occupiers, if he suddenly turns course and says he's willing to accept this plan, he'll be doomed within his own people. They'll kill him. Probably literally kill him. But if not, certainly drive him out of power. So if that's what's going to happen, the Palestinians cannot play ball. And the fact that they won't play ball costs them more. It's not just that the Israelis get to annex the settlements right now. It's that the freeze on creating new settlements only goes on for 4 years. The Palestinians now have a time clock. The time is running. They've got 4 years to cut a deal. Or as Ambassador David Friedman, the U.S. ambassador to Israel, put it, the Palestinians now have 4 years to come claim their prize. If they don't claim the prize, it's gone. At that point, it's an unmitigated win for Israel. And that's another reason, by the way, why we can't formally say, oh, this is a great plan. We love this plan. We don't love this plan because if it actually go through, if it would actually happen, it'd be terrible. All of that's all these commitments, how they're going to commit to this, that, and the other, the problem is they'll never be able to keep those commitments. They've demonstrated time and again that they don't keep those commitments. They go right back to preaching terrorism, rejecting Israel, rejecting the idea that a Jew can live in Israel, one after the other, after the next. The pursuit of, you know, the idea of, you know, the final agenda, the legitimate aspiration of the Palestinian people, quote unquote, is the destruction of Israel and remains the destruction of Israel. So if this deal would actually go through, that would be horrible. But it's not going to go through. The bottom line is this deal is going to fail because the Palestinians have dug themselves into a corner from which they cannot emerge. Mahmoud Abbas cannot agree to the peace deal without being condemned by his own people. And thus, in 4 years, the deal will expire, as it were. The Israelis will be able to resume doing settlements. But meanwhile, it's been broadcast to the world that the Israelis are totally interested in peace. The Palestinians are rejecting it. The fact that the Trump administration got 4 major Arab countries, again, Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, and Egypt, all on board with this plan, means it's something that really ought to be taken seriously, that Mahmoud Abbas ought to be negotiating. Instead, he's calling Trump a dog. And that sends a message to the world. The Israelis are interested in peace. The Palestinians are not. That doesn't tell the intelligent observer something the intelligent observer didn't already know. But now it's made clear in a way that certain European states which have tried to avoid a serious accounting of history, both their own and that of the Middle East, they have to suddenly consider that there's a real point to this, that the Israelis are interested in peace and they can't be blamed anymore. And, of course, this is a whole, you know, this is going to get into that whole thing with so-called settlement products being labeled by the EU. Here, the United States has explicitly declared that these can be now considered completely part of Israel. So I wonder how that's going to change. I did read reports that said that this is going to be a rebuke of BDS. I have not seen that in the text, but I'm wondering. And by the way, for your feedback on any aspect of today's show or any future show, the comments section of the website is open and waiting for you at jakobmenken.com for you to send a, you know, just use the contact us, send me feedback. Send me an email and tell me if you do see something in the peace plan about how it's going to affect the Europeans and the boycott movement against Israel and the labeling of settlement products. I'd be interested in hearing it. Anyway, so there we are with our very first Moral Heritage podcast. I hope you've enjoyed it. This is, again, it's an experiment. We'll see how it goes. And if the feedback is good, for sure, I should be back here in a week doing another one. So thank you for being with us and look forward to speaking to you in a week.